Blog Talk Radio.
Peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. You've listened once again to another edition of Religion Means Alive. I'm your host, Imam Alfred, the host of Religion Means Alive. And today we're speaking with Mr. Michael Young. And Mr. Young is a person that is a registered nurse, also is in the financial consultant business. And I'm going to take this opportunity on behalf of the entire staff of Religion Means Alive to welcome him to Religion Means Alive and ask him, does he have an opening statement? Mr. Young, if he's on, press 1.
Press 1 on your phone.
Hi, Imam. How are you doing? This is Michael Young.
I'm doing well. How are you, Mr. Young? Would you give us an opening statement?
Hi, my name is Michael Young, as the Imam said. I'm a registered nurse by profession, and many years ago, actually in 1999, I decided to enter into the financial services industry, and I became licensed in investments and life insurance. And since then, I've been on a mission to help people become properly protected, financially independent, and debt-free. So I'm happy to be on his show to help him with any questions that he may have and to help the public with any questions that he may have.
Tell us, when you speak of finance, Mr. Young, what do you mean? Do we mean just to have a bank account, or do we mean that we just put some money under the mattress? What is meant by that term, financial care?
Well, what I've found over the years, Imam, is that a large section of the population are what you may tend to say financially poor. I'm educationally poor when it comes to finance. And we believe in the financial services industry, if you don't know the strategies that you should use to enhance your finances, like in savings and investing, you're working against yourself. One of the things I teach people is to pay yourself first. And what I also say, too, is that your paycheck doesn't come with instructions. People get their paycheck, and they know they have to pay their rent, they have to pay their mortgage, whatever, kids to go to school, the credit cards. But most people don't pay themselves first. So that's one of the concepts that I teach my clients or anybody who are willing to listen to me. And there are several ways you could save to achieve your financial goals and dreams. And most people believe that they should just save in a bank account. Contrary to popular belief, a bank account, regular bank account, even though it's considered to be safe, is not really the place for you to actually put your money, and except for short-term needs. Hello?
When we speak of financing, can you break down to us? I like that idea of paying yourself. And that was one of the great African-American millionaires, A.G. Gaston, advised pay yourself. Tell us what you mean by pay yourself. Does that mean I get me 2 pair of Jeezys and I go ahead and buy me some Big Macs and I take my paycheck and pay for everything, things I don't need? What does that mean, pay myself?
Well, when I talk about paying yourself first, you have to look at where you want to be in financially down the road. If we follow the example of the squirrels, I see them running around the house and collecting nuts. They prepare for winter. So there's going to come a time, most people don't realize, that you have to put away for the future. There are actually only 2 sources of income, right? And one is men at work or dollars at work. So while you're young and you're growing and you're developing yourself and building your family, your need for income is high, but also too, it will also be high when you get to retirement. So when you get your paycheck, it's advisable that you put some money away in a deferred tax plan so that it grows and makes money. Money makes money. And there are certain forces that's available or concepts that's available for everyone, which is actually being used against the mass of the people out there by people who have the knowledge as far as like dollar cost averaging, being disciplined in their investment, right, and utilizing a concept that all bankers know, right, and the concept is called the rule of 72. So if you pay yourself first and utilize leverage by putting your money to work for you and utilizing the rule of 72, later on down the road, when you are no longer able to work, your money has already grown and worked for you, and you have income available or money available to supply income to supply your needs. Because from the time you're born until the time you die, you need income. And when you were born, your father and your mother provided that. But as you grow, you provided that for yourself. And when you get to retirement, it doesn't go away. Income is still needed. In order to provide that income, the money that you put away when you were a young person to provide for your future self would have grown to supply you with the income that you need.
Mr. Young, I'm very interested in the idea of taking care of our needs, but what is this idea about wealth? What does it mean to say one is developing wealth?
Well, people have different concepts concerning wealth. The Department of Labor Statistics put out a fact sheet some years ago stating that at the age, after someone works between, let's say, 25 to 65 and they retired, right, only 1% of 100 people will be considered wealthy. 5%, right, with over $1 million is considered okay, right? And most of the other people, some will be dead, at least 20% will be dead, and the rest will either be working or dependent on some other form of charity or contribution. So when you look at wealth, many people define wealth.
You repeat those statistics, they are very terrifying. They are very terrifying. It's good that you're a nurse, because some of us in the audience might have a cardiac arrest just knowing these facts.
Yes, 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 that's true. But it's been shown that at retirement, after working for many years, a lot of people haven't had enough money saved due to the fact that some people are scared, they don't know where to invest their money, or they have their money sitting on the sideline hoping for the market to move. And research is constantly being done as to how many people will achieve wealth by the time they get to retirement. And the Department of Labor and Statistics has put out different information. It's easily accessible on the internet. You could look it up and find out that in America, after working until age 65, 1% of the population would be wealthy, and that'd be having like between five million and above. The people with a million is considered just okay. How is that in what is considered one of the richest countries in the world? The thing is that a lot of people don't take advantage of certain economic forces that are available for them. Like I said before, dollar cost averaging, time and consistency, right, and leverage. When I say leverage, I mean you need to put your money to work for you, because money works 24/7. While you sleep, if I were to quote an old movie in which Michael Douglas starred in called Wall Street, he said, money never sleeps. Money works 24/7. So you have to learn to put your money to work while you're sleeping so you can have that wealth available for you at retirement.
Let me ask you this, Ms. Young. It's said, and I can't use the word, but it said the trouble with many of the Africans in the Western Hemisphere is that they think access means asset, and I can't quite. If I were an all-male audience, I would tell you what that means, but I'm coming close. That is what they have on their backs, what they have on their houses. You know, prior to the incarnation as being an imam, I was in the mortgage field. So I would see these very well-to-do African-Americans going to great parties, and they would, you know, apparently drink the best liquors and dress to the nine and when I saw their 1003, which is the uniform application for mortgages, and looked at their credit, people were earning $600,000-$700,000 per household, didn't have a dime. They didn't have any money. Their credit cards were maxed out. But I mean, there was a picture of financial, well, I would say financial candy, and in that they had the beautiful cars, the deluxe apartment, and the sky. They had all what appeared to be wealth. But frankly, they had little cash on hand, a lot of credit cards, tremendous amount of debts. What's wrong with that picture? Is it just income? Because there are some of us who think that we just have an income that's sufficient.
Well, to answer you, it'll take a little while, but I'll try my best. What we have found by research or even by just observation, a lot of people are, they could be house rich, but cash poor. They could be car rich, but cash poor. A lot of people, especially middle America, which is what's keeping the economy up, by the way, is that they want to look or follow the Joneses and appear to be doing well. There's a book called The Millionaire Next Door, in which there's this millionaire living next door, and you don't know he's a millionaire. He drives a mediocre car. He lives in a modest home, and he's a show off. But yes, he takes trips all year round with his wife and family, and he lives, but nobody knows he's a millionaire. Most people like to show you that they could be a millionaire when they're really not a millionaire. The nice house, nice fancy cars and stuff like that, best suits, you know, but they maxed out on their credit cards, right? And they try to get their kids into the best schools, which is not bad. It's good. That's a good ideal, right? But the cost of these things, you know, they pay for it later on when at time for retirement, they don't have the money to support themselves. One of the things people got to do when they're building their wealth is, as I said before, leverage their dollars so that they could become more later on. Because I'm from another country, as you probably hear from my accent, and when I came here, the stamps was like about 25 cents. Now a stamp is like 45 or 50 cents. That shows that the dollar value is declining. So therefore, the money that you're making cannot buy the same stuff that you could buy today in the next 10 years. So people got to learn how to leverage their income by saving now, right, and putting something away in an adequate investment, like an IRA, and buy into like mutual funds, and have that money grow. Most people don't do that, and that's why.
Part of your job is to educate us. What a mutual fund. I keep hearing you use the term leverage, but I get to make a comment. Going on, because the millionaire next door. I was on the millionaire on the train next door, and the guy was apparently a janitor's uniform on. And I figured he was just a working guy. Some people say working stiff. So one day I was riding on the train. It was late coming back from work, and this man was on the phone talking to his broker.
Okay.
So being nosy as I am, and being the baby boy, I'm kind of nosy. I asked him, and I saw him having the Investor's Daily in his hand, and he had all these financial tools. And this guy was apparently a janitor. He said, "I play the market." Later on, after he passed on to his death reward, it was reported that this man had $25 million.
Right.
And I had seen him on the train maybe 10 years earlier. And, he was frugal. He had a lunch bag with him. In fact, he didn't have a lunch bag. He had the old lunch buckets. He was frugal. His socks looked like they had come out of the Goodwill. His coat was old coat, but he later on. And there was another lady that worked as a civil servant, or her husband worked as a civil servant, but left apparently $300 million. I mean, I will say just as Don King would say, only in America. I think it could happen other places. But there is an economic exceptionalism that can happen here. And I think there should be more of us in the Western Hemisphere. In fact, this show is dedicated to the Africans in the diaspora from Rio de Janeiro to Halifax, Nova Scotia. We specialize in healing the mind, the finances, the wealth of the Africans been brought here to the Western Hemisphere who have been dislocated from their motherland and still are suffering trauma and creating a lot of drama, including financial drama, because we see 50 cents bankrupt. So I'm going to shut up and just let you answer for us what we mean. What do you mean when you said leverage?
Okay. What I mean when I say leverage is that there are certain financial concepts that's available. Long ago, you used to hear people talking about the man knows something, that's why he's rich, the man this, the man that. But basically, what we have found out after doing research all these years is that the man just knows certain concepts that he employs diligently over time and have it work in his favor. Let me just digress a bit. Two of the things that people have said when they get to the end of their life is that, one, they wish they had more time, and two, they wish they had more money, right? Those are two of the things, that, among other things that people say when they get to the end of their life, right? But how do you, everyone wakes up or starts their week, right, or day with 24 hours at their disposal, right? And there are 268 hours in the week for everyone. So it depends on how you utilize it. So over time, if you don't utilize your time properly, you will end up having a time deficit and also cash deficit. Okay, how do we use time? When you look at where you are right now and you want to get to retirement, you got to calculate how long it will take to get there, how much money you would need. Based on your income, you will decide how much you need to put away. But if you don't have much time, what would you do? There are other concepts out there, such as getting involved in companies or in an organization where you could leverage yourself through the efforts of others, right? People call it by different names. They call it networking, whatever. But if you can leverage yourself through the efforts of others and increase your income, therefore, that's a way you could use the power of leverage. Another way you use the power of leverage is by investing your money at an early age, right? And using the law of the rule of 72. The rule of 72 is a mathematical equation that banks use in order to make your money grow. For example, about a week ago, I checked on the going CD rate or money market rate, and it was 0.03%. If you were to divide 72, which is what the banker's rule is, by 0.03%, it'll take you 2,400 years for your money to double, right? So depending on when you want to retire, right, that'll be a long time for that money to double. And those are some of the concepts that you could use to leverage to make your money grow. If you get a better interest rate, like let's say 3%, 6%, 12%, we don't talk about 12% much these days, because of how the market has changed. But even if you use 9%, right, divided by 72, right, you get a better rate of return. But one thing I want to let you know, Imam, is that even though you can leverage your time and your money to grow for you, if you look at the people who have credit cards, the reason why they're house rich and cash poor, or they have a lot of credit, is because that same rule of 72 works against you. For example, let's say a credit card, the interest rate on it is 18%. You can divide 72 by 18, right? It'll be four every 4 years, the money you're owing on that credit card is doubling. Some people pay the minimum amount, so you can never catch up. And those are economic laws that are in place that work against you. So you could turn that around by using leverage, by investing your money early, using dollar cost averaging, utilizing time, getting another income so you could dump more money into it, and you can win the money game. We have to play this money game, but we just have not been taught the right rules. And one of the rules is the rule of 72.
Are you available to teach courses, or how can one get more of this financial literacy from you? You seem to be well-versed in this, And I would like to ask you this question. How, first of all, are you available, number one? And number two, how did you learn this? And are you available to teach this kind of literacy? Because it seems to me it's just as important as ABC. Most of us think that if we just put our money in the bank account, I know people have $300,000 and $400,000 in a bank account that's probably earning one point, I don't know what the interest rate is now, but it's very
0.03%.
So some of these people would be interested in seeing a rise in interest rate, whereas the business community wants to see the interest rate as low as possible. But those who just rely on the $500,000 in a bank account, actually, some banks even charge you for pocketing the money in the bank. They you know, that's while they use your money for that. Go ahead, Mr. Young, and answer that question, those questions for us.
Okay. One of the things the banks do, let's say you put the money on a CD, right? As I said, when I last checked on a CD rate, it was 0.03%. Now, the bank will have that money locked in for about a year or so, right? And they say, okay, you'll get, let's say you get, for argument's sake, let's say they give you 3%. You know, you don't get any more, but let's just use it for argument's sake, right? Now, the bank has certain instruments that they can invest the money in while they have it locked up for you, right, safely, right, over that year, and they will invest it, and they know where they could put the money to make it grow. Actually, they lend the money out to other people, charge them 18% on a credit card, and then turn around after the year is up and pay you 3%, right? That's back in the day when they were getting 3%, right? But imagine that. They do the same thing now. They can make the 18%, but you're getting 0.03%, right? So who is winning the money game, right? And the sad part about it is that, let's say you decide, you know what, I need this money, let me take it out to go on a little vacation. They penalize you. And whose money is that? Your money. So we have to wise up to how the banks make money, you know, in the economy. Who has the biggest buildings out there? The banks, the investment companies, right? Whereas, you know, we have the smaller buildings because we don't know how to manage money, right? They know how to manage money. When you look at Wall Street, these guys get paid millions of dollars, right, to manage money, make money grow. But it's whose money? Your money that you give to these people in the meantime, and you sit back and you hope that they can make it grow, right, or give you a good return over a period of time. But they're using certain economic laws against us, which everyone should know. Every student before they leave school should be taught the rules of money, because the first thing after they graduate, they're faced with an education bill which would not go away. You can't even get rid of it in bankruptcy. So why would you be, it's like you're being set up. You get a good education, you go to school, and then you're faced with a big bill. And most times, that's the time you're looking to start your life, start a family, get a house, stuff like that. And most people these days are not even getting a job to actually compensate to pay off these student loans. The rate of student loan volume is growing faster than credit card volume. So we are losing the money game. So as you asked, I'm available at any time. Anyone could call me. My cell number, my cell is always on. My number is 908-422-0337. Call me at any time, you know, advice, whatever, if you want to, you know, meet with me, is no problem.
And if you wish to speak with Mr. Young, you can dial 805-727-7013. Mr. Young, I understand that you're back. I happen to have met you in a very business-like manner. I mean, it was God that brought
us
together. I was riding, bringing my son to school, or really applying for my son to go to a school, and there you were in an Uber. And through the lessons of an app, someone's gotten rich with that app. It put the two of us together. I was in need of a ride. You were in the need of giving a ride. And I don't know how much money you made with it, but I made a lot of wealth and spirit with you, and also found out that you had a nursing background. We're going to talk about that a little later. Now I want to tell you, us to tell us how you got financially educated. You may not can mention the institution, but you seem to be quite versed. And second thing is so important is, I don't don't think you grew up in a wealthy home where they were teaching you from the first grade about wealth and leverage and those terms. How did you become Mr. Young, the financial guru? Religion Means Alive, and we're going to have you back, and perhaps even I would like you to host a show called Your Financial Health Could Be the Ruination of Your Life, or something to that effect. But the man that I followed and taught me about these things, the man named Imam Wahdeen Muhammad, the son of Abdullah Muhammad, used to tell his children when they wake up in the morning, good morning, and don't die broke. He would tell them when they go to bed at night, good night, and don't die broke. And I think we need to tell each other that. We somehow think it's a sin to be rich and think it's a blessing to be broke. So speak to our broken mind and broken spirit, Brother Mike. Tell us how you got educated.
Hey, Mom, it's a pleasure to do that. I came from another country, and ever since I've been here, I came here as an RN. I was recruited here because there was a shortage of nurses in the United States. So I was recruited from in Trinidad. I was sponsored here by a student hospital, and during that time, I always looked for a way to better myself. I did different little things, but I stumbled on this company, which I eventually got involved with. And just before that, I had attended a financial workshop seminar for about 5 days and did a course. It cost me $5,000 on learning the different strategies of investments and stuff like that. So even before I had met this company, I already had a background information firsthand from people who traded the market and did things like options and leaps and all that stuff. So those terminology, you know, I had, you know, firsthand information from these professional people. So when I joined this company and started to do what was required and help people out, I was better able to articulate and understand the situation that people in and articulate the information to them based on their particular situation. So that's why I sound like I'm so versed, because I have a passion for this subject and I'm always doing research. So one of the ways to really understand finances is to develop a passion for it, because finance from the day you're born till the day you die. So you may as well learn about it and get to understand, you know, the economic forces.
Let me ask you, how do you need it the day you die? How do you need finance? I thought when you're dead, they just put you in the ground. Is that you need finance to be put in the ground?
Of course. When we say we need finance,
I'm being deliberately facetious. I've also gone
that's
to
all right.
Where our people
that's
spend
right.
$40,000 and $50,000. They say, I want to be buried in one of the most expensive casket they have.
I understand. Why I say you need money from the day you're born to the day you die is because last week I met a guy who is into the insurance business, and what he does, he sells people end-of-term insurance, meaning that there are a lot of people, when the time comes to bury their loved ones, don't have a cent. And he was saying that when you go to the funeral home, you got to have some way to pay them, whether it be a credit card or you have an insurance policy that's going to pay for the funeral. So you need money from the day you're born for income all the way to the day you die to supply the needs for your burial purposes. So that's why I say you need money. And then it's not right for someone to live their whole life and not leave income or some inheritance to their family. So if you use the economic laws that's yet to be used for you and not against you, right, you could have a satisfactory life and then leave income and inheritance to your family, right? So income is needed for you and also to help carry on for your loved ones. So in my field of business, we also say that, like when we recommend insurance for people to have as income protection, we consider insurance to be a gift of love. If you have insurance when you die, that money is going to go to your inheritors, and that's going to help them carry on their lives, you know, the way that you wanted them to have it, you know, in a productive way, and not worry about money.
Yes, if you'd like to join the conversation, you can join us at 805-727-7013. I notice you say you came to this country because there was a shortage of nurses. So you're filled with the field of nursing, and how did you become a nurse?
Well, that takes us back to money again, Imam, because I came from a broken home. I grew up with my mom, and at the time, I was an A student in class, and eventually, I decided I wanted to be a doctor. But we didn't have the funds, so I settled to be a nurse. And I've loved the career. I've done it for the last 34 years. I like helping people, and that's my story.
Still a practicing nurse?
Yes, to some extent. I just took a little sabbatical from it, you know, so I could do other stuff. And I've been doing it for 34 years, you know. I just took a little break, you know, and I want to concentrate on my other business that I've been doing since 99.
Right. Now,
but I did that.
Let me ask you this. There are some young men out here in this audience. And there are young women, too, but I'm really, my target audience is African-American men. And when I say African-American, I mean Africans from the Rio de Janeiro to Halifax, Nova Scotia.
Okay.
It would seem to me that nursing should be a choice for a lot of us. Some of us are not frightened by blood. I mean, you know, we don't mind let's be not be so facetious. So I just think that we should consider this field. Because let me ask you, what does we talking finance, what does a nurse just out of nursing school, let's first talk about the LPN, what do they earn, like, per hour?
It could be between $17 to like $25 an hour. It depends on where they go to work. It all depends on, you know, where they go to work and what area. Like, they can work in ER, they can work in...
But they're definitely going to make more than the person working in McDonald's. And that's for sure. And generally, it'll be an LPN, I believe it's about 1 year in training. Isn't that right?
Yeah, about...
And what about a registered nurse?
About 2 years.
About 2 years.
Back when I did it, I went to school for 3.5 years, and fortunately, when I did it, it was in Trinidad, and we were paid at the time a stipend, you know, so we went to school, but was being paid, so if you had a family, you could support your family. But in this country, I'm not too updated on, you know, how long the programs take, but I think it's could be between 3 and 4 years, depending on if you're going for your BSN
We'll lay them out to that. I spent part of my life rooting for nursing school, so I can tell you that it's 1 year for LPNs. For RNs, it's a 2 year program or 4 year, and then they got what's called a bachelor's of nurses. It's 4 years, and then there's these called advanced nursing practitioners who now in some states can write prescriptions and be independent doctors. So there's a lot of money, even a DNP, a doctor of nurse practitioner. Doctors are very careful.
That's
they hate to call them doctors and nurses, right? But they are doctors, even though they are not physicians.
Right.
So these are fields that we should be looking at and pushing. You know, we complain a lot in this country about lack of opportunities. But I believe, Mr. Young, and you might correct me, there's a need for at least 500,000 nurses somewhere around that area. It's so desperate that America had to go and import nurses from other countries. And I want to ask you while I'm at that, did you have to take a special exam, or did you, when you came from Trinidad, what, they would just allow you to come and practice, right? You went, came straight from Trinidad to be a nurse right here, right?
Well, in actuality, the system that I learned nursing under was considered like the British system. And coming to the United States, you had to go through certain pre-qualifications. There's an exam called the CGFNS, which is the Commission Graduate on Foreign Nursing Students, and you had to do that. And one of the things they never believed that we spoke was English, so that one of the highlights of the exam was an English exam. We may speak broken English at some times, but we do speak English and write English. But you just can't say that you're proven in an exam.
And write it quite proficiently, I may add, quite fluently.
Right. So once I passed that exam, then I came to the United States, and that was just the first step before I did the nursing state board. Now, I already had my license as a registered nurse under the English system in Trinidad, but I had to now get the U.S. license, and I did that. I passed that exam, and then they allowed me to actually function as a registered nurse, utilizing the skills that I had before. I was only like about 9 years into nursing when I first came here, so I was really already fully trained. And then,
so you didn't have any difficult passing that exam?
Nah, I'm good at exams.
Let me ask you this. We have some students in the audience. Is there an art to taking an exam?
Well, there is, and it depends on your study style. But what I usually do, I just would read through chapters and stuff, whatever that I need to study, and do a lot of questions. And even though I get them wrong, I don't mind getting them wrong, because what I do, I just go back and look at the rationale based on what I got wrong, and then I have an understanding. So that's my strategy that I use when I'm studying, whether I did the securities exam, the life insurance exam, or nursing exam. That's my strategy. Do a lot of questions, and the questions open your eyes as to how they present the different arguments to the questions when you do the rationale. So that helps you. So the next time you remember the rationale, and that gives you the answer, like, you know, it's right there.
We were picking your brain, Mr. Young. You're a financial expert. We're now going to pick your brain on just study skills. I have some young people in the audience, and I was asking you about the art of taking exams. And as I was telling our audience that you're a nurse from Trinidad, had to come and pass the English language exam, which you passed with flying colors, because people in Trinidad learn in school fluent English, British style, and could pass any English exam because you all took the GCE, which is, the, I guess you have the
you
West Indian school exam, GCONA levels, and they are the equivalent of the American two-year colleges. Now, also, Mr. Young, I understand you had to take a series of financial exams, and I would ask you to clarify for our audience or point out to our audience what those exams are like. How is it that you, well, without mentioning any companies, how do you come take those exams? And again, just reiterate for us study skills, because I think it's very important, the art of taking exams. There's exams I've seen on exams that there are never this. And if one doesn't read the exam question, if you get very anxiety-driven, one could know the material and can't pass the exam. And I hate to say it, Mr. Young, I've met some real dummies who could pass all kinds of exams, and they weren't smart at all. But they were so cautious that they read the questions, and they had a good educated guess, and they passed the exam for fine colors, where I know people have been trained at Harvard and places, and I know a man in particular, a very famous man, I won't name him, he's pretty nasty person, he went to Yale's law school, taking a bar and could never pass it. But he's still a billionaire, though, so I get this. You all know him. I won't keep him anonymous. He wouldn't keep me anonymous if he had any information like that on me, but that's the case with him. Go ahead, Mr. Young.
Well, to do the work that I do in the financial services industry, you know, it's a highly regulated industry, and you're constantly under scrutiny. I had to pass the life insurance exam, which is regulated by the insurance and banking industry. I also passed the Series 63 and Series 66 exam, so I can recommend, you know, financial products to people and also get them involved in investment. So after you do that, you continue an education. You have to continue to be updating yourself on the concepts and updated information as put out by the financial services industry. So it's a constant thing. You're always on the cutting edge because the financial services industry is a dynamic industry that's changing all the time, and you have to know your stuff. And when it comes to taking exams, what I do is just study hard. I block out everything else for a period of time, and I just do a lot of cramming. And then I do a lot of questions. I do thousands of questions. And I don't mind whether I get them wrong. I just go back afterwards and look at the rationale as to what, you know, they're really looking for. Because two answers may look alike, but when you look at the rationale, it tells you what's the difference. And that's one of the ways that I did my nursing exam and all my other exams, and you know, to get me to where I am right now. So that's what I would recommend. To a lot of questions, because the questions, actually, when you get to the exam, it's all questions. You have no book. But if you understand the rationale behind the question, then you could answer them. And the next thing to do.
Will you
is
explain
to, you know,
to us what do we mean by rationale? But it's a very important thing. And I've learned I had to take sales exams. I've taken a lot of exams. If you don't understand the rationale, tell us what do you mean, what we mean when we say the rationale.
Well, when I say the rationale, when you get the answer, like if you go into the textbook, they will tell you why that is the choice that the author made, or if it's the right answer based on how that particular subject is done, right? For example, let's say you do a question, check off one answer, and it's wrong. Like most times when I do my exams, you could do it online, and it's a tutorial but with questions. And when you check on the wrong answer, it tells you you're wrong. When you get to the end of the question or the questionnaire, and you go back and you go to all the different answers that they say it's right, they'll tell you why it's right. So that's one way of learning. When you look at your answer and you're sure about your answer, but yet still you look at the answer and you see the reason why they say it's right, that's the rationale you use to understand why you were wrong. Or you may not be totally wrong, but that's the best choice at the time. So it just explains to you why that is the correct answer. That's what I mean by the rationale as to the choice of the answer.
Right, so in other words, you just don't have the answer. A is the right answer, but you got the reason why A is the right answer, and why
right.
B is the wrong answer. That's the point. And so repetitiveness
right.
doing that, I mean, there's hardly any way without just old-fashioned drilling, and we need to do that. And I'm hoping that we can prepare our people, you know, because this is a very competitive world. I'm having to tell people I'm very much pushing the African people. I mean, we got the Indians, we got the Chinese, we love all people. But race tells us that there's competition, and anybody who says they're not interested in their own group, it's crazy, in my opinion. Let's now return back to money again, and that's in order to have education. We need to address the question of whether or not one should start. You bring this point up, and it's a sad point, but it has to be brought up. You need money from the cradle to the grave. And
yep.
One lady by the name of Gwen Guthrie came out with a song, and she said, "Ain't nothing going on but the rent. You got to have a JOB to be with me." And I'm wondering, is the late Gwen Guthrie right?
She was smart.
Was she on the money or not?
She was on the money because, I mean, you see, you can't buy stuff without money. And people buy stuff with credit cards, but it's borrowed money. You know, they enjoy
so you're telling me there's no romance without finance.
it's funny, but you know, sometimes it comes down to that, because at the end of it, you don't get it. You can't take the romance to the bank. You can't take the romance to the grocery store. You need dollars, so it comes down to the dollars. You know.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So even marriage and all that, all the romance, and you don't have any finance, you're in really a lot of trouble.
Big trouble, big trouble.
So now, repeat again your telephone numbers and how we can get in touch with you, and I hope you'll come back again. Tell us how we can get in touch with you.
Okay, let me give you my email address. My email address is yoquiero, that's Y-O-Q-U-R-O, 7@gmail.com. So yoquiero7@gmail.com. My name is Michael Young, as he said, and my telephone number is 908-422-0337. I'm also on Facebook.
And what's your name on Facebook?
Michael Young.
Michael Young, okay. I didn't know. Was Michael the banker? Michael the Nerd,
Michael Young.
Prisoners. Now let's talk about this. Is there a need? Is there a connection, rather, or is there a need therein between finance and mental and spiritual health? What is the connection there, Michael?
Well, I believe that the good Lord, however you want to look at him, from whatever religious background you have, didn't put us here to suffer, right? He provided us with all the resources and the intelligence to make decisions and to live abundantly. And I believe if you have money and you could live abundantly, then you have no excuse to serve your God. You can serve him without having to worry. But most people's lives are so caught up in trying to make money that sometimes people don't even go to church, right? They can't give charity or zakat, as they say in Islam, right? So, to some extent,
that is 100% right.
So you should live abundantly. We were put here to live abundantly. It's just that we don't abide by certain laws. It's like the law of gravity. Anybody who tries to defy the law of gravity will suffer the consequences. The same way to defy the law of finances, like dollar cost averaging, the rule of 72, using time and consistency, right? You suffer the consequences. At the end of your life, your time runs out because everyone has a certain amount of time, and during that time, you have to project where you will be next 10, 15, 20 years and pay yourself so that you have money at that time. As I said before, there are only two sources of income, dollars at work, or let's say men at work first, and dollars at work. And your dollars at work in your adequate investment vehicles that you have chosen upon the advice of somebody like me or other people who are in the field, right, will provide the dollars that you need to provide the income when you no longer can work. Because there's going to come a time in your life when, even though you want to think that you're still young and macho and strong and you can still lift stuff and do stuff, but the way the economical system is made up, they will prefer to pay more money to a younger person fresh out of university than an older guy who will need more benefits. Right? So the time is going to come when your body is going to say, listen, man, I can't wake up in the morning to go to work anymore. You know, I can't do the night shift anymore. And you're going to want to cut back. In the meantime, if you didn't save, you're going to have a problem. That's why we have senior people, as we see over the years, at certain companies asking you, can I supersize this? Can I take your order? Elderly people who should be home with their grandchildren or enjoying themselves, they didn't plan for retirement. In what is considered one of the richest countries in the world, right? Most people in this country could have been multimillionaires if they met with someone and guided them and took their advice and dollar cost average, saved a little bit more every month, every year, you know, to beat inflation, and they would be living happy, right? So those are some of the things that I believe that people should take advantage of, you know.
Yes, and I agree with you. On the second week of the month, we emphasize in our Sunday lecture the need for finance. I think that we are making a fool of ourselves when we say God doesn't want us to have money. It says, the Bible says, I'm going to give you the Bible, and the Bible says that seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all of these things shall be added unto you. So I don't see anywhere where God has forbidden us to get money. Things. Money is things. And I also want to correct by our African-American audience, which is a terrible misunderstanding, that money is the root of all evil. The love of money is the root of all evil. Because we shouldn't love money. We should love, see, money is a tool. Love of God through service of humanity. God doesn't need anything from us. But we need everything from him, and we need everything from each other. And I'm going to give you the Quran. It says, seek with what means God has made available to you the promised life. That's the life after death, or the better, the future life. But don't forget your share of the material world. I'm a material being. I'm not a material girl, as Madonna would say. I am a material being. I need money. Things get pretty funny if I don't have any money, but I shouldn't love money. I see it as a tool, because maybe brother Mr. Young needs $10,000 so he can get a kidney transplant. Well, at least I can give him $100. But if I don't have anything to give, I can't ask God to bless me because I ain't got nothing to give. And it's that more blessed to give than is to receive, as the Bible. The book says it. I mean, so scripture's replete with the hand that gives being more blessed than the hand that receives. So we should understand that. I want to get the theology of wealth out of the way for as we go into this. And I'm hoping we can talk, get a few moments, we can talk about some of the other interesting subjects that you have, and that is in nutrition and health. I just wanted to understand, Mr. Young Lee, how diet, exercise, and financial health can contribute to peace. Because we see in our community lots of fast food restaurants, terrible eating habits, metabolic diseases such as diabetes, high blood pressure, hypertension, sleep disorders, all metabolic diseases. And worration, many of them are worrations that come as a result of no money. Being broke ain't no joke. Take it from me. But before, let me give you a commercial while I'm at it. Dude, you can join the conversation at 805-727-7013. And to keep this program on the air, we ask you to send your donations. Some of you do send your donations. More of you should. You can just easily go to PayPal and put Imam Alfred or Religion Means Alive at Gmail, Imam Alfred at Gmail, or Alfred Religion Means Alive at Gmail. And we will get the donations that help pay the cost of this program. This is not free. Let me tell y'all something. Blog Talk Radio is my friend. I've been with him 5 years. I have not yet been able to translate that friendship into payments. They require payment every month. I don't make a payment to them. They'll send me a nice computer note that says, well, your program will be discontinued unless we get your credit card. So if any of y'all can show me how to transfer love into payment with Blog Talk Radio or even the mortgage company, I'm telling you, I'm going to give you a reward. But until then, I need your donations. Telephone company want money, just pay them today due to your donations. The computer company, they want money. It just seems that all these companies want money from me. And I know they love me because they tell me, we love you, your business, keep supporting us. But if I call T-Mobile up and tell them I ain't got no money, I'm saying at 12 o'clock tonight, I'm sorry, Mr. Mom, you sound like a very nice guy, they tell me, but we're going to cut your phone off. So I need your donation. Keep going. This is not a ministry of – it's a ministry of love, I must tell you. But it's financed by money. We have a trip to Chicago May 1st, and I don't think they're going to allow us to get on the highway for free. If we fly, I don't think they're going to allow us to go for free. If we get on the train, even if we get on the mega bus, we got to have a box of chicken, at least something healthy to eat while we ride the mega bus. And I don't think the mega bus yet are giving free trips. Now, they might. Now, some of y'all, I heard they were giving trips for 33 cents, but you can even get that 33 cents to get on the bus. So I hope you by now understand that love can't pay no bills. If it does, and you know how I can pay my bills, please contact me at Imam Alfred at Gmail and give me your formula. Brother Mike, we have a few more minutes, so we can we're going to talk a little bit about, you can just make a comment on the relationship between health and wealth and peace of mind and how being broke ain't no joke.
Well, in order to be successful, one of the things that we first need is energy. Once your energy is up, you're motivated to do things. If your energy is down, you're not motivated to do stuff. And to get your energy up, you have to learn to eat healthy, exercise, get enough sleep. I've been a vegetarian since I was about 12 years old, And it's been a long time. That has helped me to maybe not get certain illnesses. I'm hardly ever sick, maybe a little cold or something like that. So basically, I'm healthy. And I hardly go to the doctor. My wife says, man, you should go to the doctor. I say, listen, doctors make a lot of money off of you. They don't need to make money off of me, right? Because I'm healthy. You, just like you have financial laws that can work for or against you, there are health laws that can work for or against you. And most people think they're just putting something in their mouth because, you know, it looks good, it makes sense. But you got to decide whether you want to live or whether you want to die. And you are what you eat. Most people don't want to believe that, but you are what you eat, right? And it's not to say that you're a vegetable because you eat vegetable, but you're using basic building products to build your body, right? Whereas when you eat, from my angle, when you eat macro proteins like proteins from meat and stuff, right, you could be destroying your body because meat takes a longer time to go to your system and drains your energy. Besides making love and having sex, digestion takes the most energy from your body. Most people don't know that. And the process of digestion, if you go to lunch and you decide to go back to work, most times you might feel like you have a hangover, you're tired, you can't work again. It's because the digestion of the food that you eat is taking a toll on you. So you have to learn to eat wise. Eat small meals, eat light meals, right? Drink a lot of water and exercise, and Mother Nature will take care of the rest. And if you're healthy, then you'll be saving money too. You won't have to go to the doctor. You could save that money in an investment, right, and watch your money grow. So it's, you're benefiting both ways, right, healthy and wealthy.
Now, so there's a direct correlation between it. Now, suppose I don't know anything about wealth building. How can we learn about this? This is, it amazes me that African Americans who are physicians, African Americans who are lawyers, African American teachers, nurses, very, very few of us, and that's from all the communities, whether it be Africans from the Americas, from the southern states, northern states, African Americans from the West Indies, African Americans from Canada. We seem to be probably the most financial and economic illiterate people here in North America. Would you agree with that?
We have found a lot of people that don't understand finances. And in one of the richest countries in the world, and so much access to the information that I teach is available, we find people with a $600 cell phone, but they don't know how to look up what is an IRA. Or to do an investment. But they just spend $600 on a cell phone. So people are things rich like cell phone, cars, stuff like that, nice clothes, but they're educationally poor. So you have the access. We live in a time called the information age that we are not going to be going back, right? Information is going to be coming more and more accessible. And simple thing as Googling the internet and finding information is at your fingertips. Wherever you go, it's with you 24/7, and people are not taking advantage of that. But what I do, anyone's desire, I set up time with them. I sit and I do a financial game plan and educate them about money. What I have found is that if you don't get the education about something, then you won't know how to act, right? And three things that I've found, right, doing what I do, that people lack. They lack the education, they lack a game plan, and a coach. And when you sit with me and I educate you and I put together a game plan for you, I'm your financial coach for life. If you want to kick me out, you can kick me out if you want to. But I'm there with you and I'll hold your hand and direct you to your end, whatever you want to achieve. I be like your financial GPS, right? If you're leaving from here to go to New York and you make a wrong turn, your GPS will say, oh, rerouting. I'll be the guy to hold your hand and reroute you, providing you decide that you really want me to be there with you. I'll be there with you. So you need a financial game plan. You need education, a game plan, and a coach. And that's what I provide. And most people in the United States spend more time planning a vacation or a wedding than they spend planning the whole life, right? And that's just a fleeting fantasy. It's going to go away, and all you're going to have to remember that is pictures. But if you set up a financial game plan, you could have pictures, memories, and you could have money too. And I could help people with that. So call me at 908-422-0337, and let me help you be a coach.
Thank you. And will you come back? Hopefully you'll come back next month and we'll talk more about health and wealth. I think there's a connection. Give us your email address and your telephone number again as we go sign off the air on Religion Means Alive. And the last words we're going to hear, we're going to have our brother, Mike Young, to give us a closing statement and to give us his address and how one can reach Mike Young, who will coach us from poverty to wealth and to health.
I want to say thank you, Iman, for allowing me to talk on your show. It's been a pleasure being able to address the people who are listening. And my email address is yokiero7@gmail.com. That's yokiero7@gmail.com. And my telephone number is 908-422-0337. And I'd be happy to come back to talk on this show again. Thank you.
Thank you. Peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. You've listened once again to another edition of Religion Means Alive. Thank you and good night. Thank you again, Mike.
Thank you. Thank you, Imam. Good night.